Registry Matters is an independent production. The opinions and ideas here are that of the host and do not reflect the opinions of any other organization. If you have problems with these thoughts, FYP.
Recording live from FYP Studios East and West, transmitting freezingly across the internet. This is episode 211 of Registry Matters. Good evening, Larry. Happy Saturday night. How are you?
Well, good evening. I'm just doing wonderful. Just finished having an MRI examination, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. So are you going to live?
They don't tell you. They tell you that the radiologist will read it, and then it'll be turned over to your physician. So I don't know anything.
Are we going to be posting a job application, like a job opening on the Registry Matters website shortly?
Possibly so, yes. It's dealing with that accident back in April, still having pain management issues. So, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. I think we probably should dive right in because, I mean, like, we're just going to call it short. Like, it's a 10-minute show tonight because there's nothing going on.
That's right. We'll be out here before you know it.
Can you give us the quick rundown?
Well, we've got listener questions. We've got a comment or two, a voicemail. We've got an amazing victory to talk about from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. I mean, you name it, we've got it. We've got, hopefully, if there's enough time, the Why You Should Not Talk to the Police, reason number one, that series. I mean, we're just filled, ready to go.
All right. Well, we should just dive right in because otherwise we will be here all night. First thing up is that a question came in from David. It says, on the podcast, you have recommended that people in chat rooms simply do not talk to possible decoys or plants that claim to be underage persons. That's a working solution. I propose a reverse sting. Go on to one of these sites that you know is being monitored and pretend to be a minor. Ignore all hits and see if anyone, including the content moderator, ever challenges you or tells you to get off or stop. If no one does, or you gather a sizable number of hits, then it will be possible to present those results to the media and to whatever law enforcement is protecting that site with the proposition that they are not only doing their job by allowing your presence on the site, they are purposefully baiting people instead of protecting minors. Interesting idea there, Larry. Okay.
Never thought of that, but it sure seems to intrigue me that you could do that. I have a suspicion that they would figure out a way to get you out of the site, but I don't know that. We'll have to find someone in the free world that has enough time and the skills to do a reverse thing, but they seem to become very popular here lately. You know, they're doing those kind of like the catch a predator stings. They're doing some rendition of that around the country.
Yeah, they seem to pop up, and we get information about those from time to time of people doing their own little stings. Yeah, so we should set up and put our own plants out there, and then what would we ultimately do? He's saying that we gather enough information that these sites. I mean, I've heard that the FBI is running half of the child porn websites out there. Like, I mean, that means they're in possession of it.
Well, I don't know for sure if his theory would hold true, but it would certainly be an interesting test. If you're trying to protect minors, if someone goes on an adult's website and creates a profile of a minor, we'll see how quick they do anything about it. I think that's the essence of his proposal, right?
I think so. Interesting. All right. Well, we'll flag that and come back around on that at some point.
Well, he will be writing to us from time to time. He's one of our regulars. So okay. I'm sure that once he finds out that we talked about this, he'll have something else to add.
Very well. Then another question, this one handwritten, says to the legal corner. Greetings. I live in Texas, and in 3 years, I will serve all of my 20-year sentence. I have close friends in Peru and a fiancé waiting for me in Latvia. Upon my release, I plan to visit one and live in the other country. My question is, if I'm abroad for several years and I return to the United States, would I be arrested for failure to register in my home state of Texas or any state for that matter? I have family I wish to visit and do not want to risk going back to prison. Years ago, you had published in the legal corner about passports. You listed a website that has a matrix of countries that allow a sex offender in and ones that do. Oh, sorry. Sex offender. Oh, they let that allow sex offenders in and those that do not. In prison, we do not have access to that information, and it would be very helpful if you could list the Matrix in your next issue of Narsal for those of us planning to get out. It will help plan if we can go to where our loved ones are. And thank you very much. Okay, so he wants our tag. Is that what it is? Registrant Travel Action Group?
Yes, that travel matrix that they have. But his question, in terms of would he be arrested, the answer would be you shouldn't be, because when you're outside the United States, there's not an obligation to comply. So assuming that you complied with the process to leave the United States, which is to, in most instances, to notify 21 days of advance, in advance, so that they can do that process to notify the country where you're visiting, then you would have no more obligation. You just can't register if you're going to be in these other nations for a long time. But where people get tripped up is they can't stay in these nations permanently because they don't have permanent residency or citizenship of these countries, so they end up having to return to the United States. So if you do return to the United States, you will again have a registration obligation. It wouldn't magically evaporate just because you were out of the United States for 3 years. I mean,
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think a letter like this is, I don't think the person plans on telling anybody he's leaving, and I think he just hops on a plane and splits. Or not necessarily a plane, leaves.
Well, we don't advise him to do that, and I can tell you unequivocally what will happen if you do that. If you are registered anywhere in the United States and you cease reporting in to your registration officials where you're registered, they will put a warrant out for your arrest. And they will not, I can't say for sure what states would or would not extradite you and whether the feds would extradite you. We don't have extradition agreements with all nations on earth. So I don't know if they would extradite you for that. But I can tell you this, when you come back to the United States, they will certainly prosecute you. So I don't advise anyone to do that. It would just be very unwise if you have that thought in mind, because you will be arrested at some point, certainly if you enter the United States.
Okay. All right. Well, Registrant Travel Action Group. If you search for Registrant Travel Action Group on Google, I believe it's registranttag.org is the URL for it. And
he's wanting to know if we can publish it. And I don't know how long it is. Yeah, we have very tight space in terms of the newsletter, what we can publish. But it could be possible, depending on the size of it, that FYP might provide that to him as one of the many services that we provide to our audience, because we recognize that you cannot obtain a lot of this stuff. We give you websites, and we have sense enough to know that many of you can't. You don't have friends, or you can't get on the internet. We know that.
All right. Yeah, we probably could. It lists several countries, and it doesn't efficiently use space very well. That I don't think that it would fit very well in the newsletter very well. And plus, that's a floating, moving target kind of thing, and that's all anecdotal. Like if you, Larry, go travel and you make it in and you report, then maybe they list that as yes, but I go over to the same country and I don't get in. So then what's the result? Maybe?
That's not
a scientific kind of thing.
That is absolutely correct. And I tell people that the same thing with registration requirements. We're providing information. FYP is providing the information from the Class Kids Foundation. It's a summary of registration requirements. It's not the full statute. The statutes run 20, 30, 40, 50 pages. Right. And trying to find a resource where we can PDF 50 pages for each state, and they alter them and amend them almost annually because the victims advocates think of something else that needs to be added in terms of things you cannot do. But we don't have an easy resource, but we are providing those summaries, and they're updated annually by Class Kids. But we make it clear that these things are coming courtesy of Class Kids. And yeah, so any beef you have about the accuracy will be directed to Class Kids.
All right. And then we had a comment on our Patreon feed. It said, "Amen, Larry. The state intends for the treatment provider to be trained set of eyes and ears for the officer and the state. We have to write out a relapse prevention plan, and that has to be included in a packet to the state whenever someone is released from treatment. My suspicion is that evidence for the future should someone reoffend. I could see that relapse prevention plan being introduced into evidence with the narrative, Mr. So-and-so identified his risk factors. He knew what they were. He listed four interventions for each risk factor, So, Mr. So-and-so knew his risks and how to negate those risks, and he chose not to do so. Do you think that's how it would go down?
I'm certainly hoping not. I haven't heard of it going down that way, but I've learned in this business that when you start thinking that things can't happen, they do. All you have to do is look at the New Mexico Department of Corrections behavioral contract that they've forced the PFRs to sign. And if you look at the various iterations that I have going back approximately 20 years, they keep thinking up new things. But right. I would like to think that there's some confidentiality of this stuff since it was in a treatment setting. And I'd like to think that they would not try to introduce that. But I don't rule out anything.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, and just in the interest of time, we'll keep moving along. Will also sent us in a voicemail on a different subject. Let's see how this goes.
Good evening, Andy and Larry. This is Will. I have a question I'd like you guys to discuss, if you would. The updated Tennessee Registry is displaying information that is not authorized by statute due to a coding error. The state has no idea when this error will be corrected. Criminal charges that were amended and reduced are being displayed under a criminal history heading. Is there any cause of action I could use to force the state to either take down the registry until the coding error is repaired and the unauthorized information removed from public view, or at least post a notice conspicuous that says information is inaccurate on the registry due to a coding error? I would appreciate any advice you guys could give, and to all you people who think this registry is such a wonderful thing, you're such friendly young people. Thank you, and good evening.
I've got a special clip I'd like you to play.
Oh, do you? Does it yep. sound like this? Is that the one?
That's the one. That was only part of it. Play the whole thing.
That's all that I have on that laugh, Larry. Well, they're not going to take down the website. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, people have been murdered and they didn't take down the website. The governor, Nikki Haley in South Carolina, was governor when a couple were murdered. And we, being Narsil, wrote a letter to the governor. And of course, we didn't expect that she would actually do it, and they didn't. So if being killed, I mean, you just have to put it in context. If two innocent people, certainly one of them was innocent because it was the spouse of the registrant. If the people being killed is not able to take the registry down, the potential for inaccurate information is not going to be able to take the registry down. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. But in terms of a cause of action, as a general rule, and I don't know Tennessee law, so this is just generalities. Most of the time, you're going to need to show that you've been harmed. And some states have presumptive harm for information that's not accurate, and some states don't. We don't have presumptive harm in my states, so therefore we'd have to show that we were actually harmed. And if Tennessee requires that you actually prove your harm, I can assure you the cause of action would go down like this. Really? Now, show me how much money you were making before you had the registry, before we had the information on the registry. Well, I was making $12.20 an hour. How much are you making now? $12.20 an hour. And you were harmed how?
Right.
And so you wouldn't be able to show the necessary requisite harm. And then you would say you suffered emotional stress. You'd say that. Well, everybody thinks that that's an easy thing. So then guess what you get to do? You get to open up all your medical records to discovery. When you put that into play about the emotional stress and how it's harmed you, and they get to depose you and ask you about all the treatment you've had in your life. And they can go back a long time to find out if there's any pre-existing condition that could be causing you this anxiety that you're claiming that's because of the registry. So although it sounds good in theory, I would just about bet if he spent an entire week on the phone calling lawyers in Tennessee, he probably wouldn't have a lot of receptive audience.
All right, then. Okay. Let's see. We very well maybe do we need to do the New Mexico letter that came in, right? I think that's where we are.
Yeah, that's where
we are. Yes. Okay, I had one tab out of order. All right. So this came in from an email message, and I forwarded it over to you. So here it goes. So I plan to move back to New Mexico, and I fully understand my offense was not listed on the internet, etc. But I have to register every 90 days or 6 months. But I was looking looking up, and it said if you have a deferred sentence, you do not have to register. I show this was updated as of January in 22. Now, granted, I'm assuming I have to register, but I do recall that my attorney told me over 2 years ago that an attorney told her I may not and I may have to. I'm not asking for legal advice, just seeing if you have any insight on this. I'm asking it because I will have to quit my job when I return, since you have to get them to sign a form that you are a PFR, and my company will not have any of that. And I'm choosing to open up a collectible shop with my son. Thank you for your help. I look forward to getting home back in Rio Rancho and getting back to my family. P.S. I enjoy your podcast, and it's helped me get through some tough times. Well, thank you for writing that in. Larry, I think you are probably the expert on the New Mexico.
Well, I think I come close to at least being knowledgeable, but I would challenge him to show me in our statutory scheme where it says you have to have an employer sign it. That just doesn't exist. So that's something that either a law enforcement official told him or he's decided to read into it while it's not there. What it actually says is that you're required to notify your employer in writing of your status as a PFR. It doesn't say your employer is required to sign it. So those are two different things. Now, the result is often the same, whether they have to sign it or not. It's really immaterial. If your employer doesn't, it certainly causes problems for people. But that is in the law since 2005. That has been in our law that you have to notify your employer in writing. And we had a high-profile case in the Sunshine Theater, and the Sunshine Theater said that they wouldn't have hired the person. I don't know if his name's not coming to my mind, but they said they wouldn't have hired the person had they known he was on the registry. But the registry was it was online at the time, but they didn't bother to check. So our current Attorney General, Hector Balderas, decided that he would sponsor a bill to make sure that never happened again. So our law has that clause in there that you have to notify your employer in writing. But there's nothing in there that says the employer has to sign anything. But now here's what does happen. Many sheriffs, including Bernalillo County, they tell you that you need to take our form and get it signed. And I tell them, no, that the law doesn't actually say that. But that is somewhat of a protector for you. Because here's the way that goes down. Say that your employer at the lower level, companies can have hierarchies where at the lower level they like you and they hire you. And all of a sudden, he's correct that most of the time your employment is going to be on the internet in terms of where you work, the address and whatnot, the statute is written poorly enough that almost everybody's employment ends up listed. So when the people start calling the employer and complaining about the PFR working there, that gets elevated up the food chain. And the regional manager says, we've got a what? Doing what? Did you tell me that we've got a sex offender working at that location? Who the hell hired him? Mm-hmm. Who approved that? Well, here's the way it would go down. So the regional manager calls and the district manager says, who put that person in unit number 212? And the store manager says, well, I didn't know he was a PFR. Well, if that store manager has signed that document, that serves as a protection for you because then they can't weasel out of it and say they didn't know. So in some aspects, it protects you because you've got it signed. And then since the statute requires that you have notified them, what would happen if the company said, you mean to tell me he's on the registry? He never told us that. I never would have hired the SOB. You see how even though they're breaking the law and they're inventing something that's not in the statute, in some demented kind of way, it can protect you. So back to the rest of his question in terms of whether you'll have to register here. I am not going to even go there in terms of his offense because we've learned in the years we've been doing this podcast that people tend to minimize and list only one of their offenses and the most favorable one. So what I can tell you is that when you come here, you have a right to a due process, the most robust one that I can think of around the country, where that you have a determination made if it's equivalent and what it's equivalent to. If he is correct that it is only electronic solicitation, he would be correct that would be one of our less heinous offenses. But if they charged him, if they translate that out to a criminal to an attempted criminal sexual penetration, that changes everything. So it all determined by how that translation takes place and what they say it's equivalent to. And then he can certainly file an appeal if he doesn't like the translation. But he very well may be right, and he very well may be wrong in terms of that process. So when he gets here, that process will begin to unfold in terms of what his offense is equivalent to, what his Texas offense is equivalent to here.
Okie dokie.
Are you a first-time listener of Registry Matters? Well, then make us a part of your daily routine and subscribe today. Just search for Registry Matters through your favorite podcast app. Hit the subscribe button and you're off to the races. You can now enjoy hours of sarcasm and snark from Andy and Larry on a weekly basis. Oh, and there's some excellent information thrown in there too. Subscribing also encourages others of you people to get on the bandwagon and become regular Registry Matters listeners. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to Registry Matters right now. Help us keep fighting and continue to say F-Y-P.
Larry, we gotta jump right into the feature segment, and I guess I'll do this now. Tell us, like, give us the 10-second version of what's going on.
Well, I thought we had breaking news.
Well, that was the break. Did it not play for you? Did you not hear the breaking news?
No, it didn't play.
Well, okay. It's there anyway. So we have a case from Butts County. You know what, Larry? I have a clip of him saying something that I want to share with you. I couldn't find the one piece that I really wanted to, but I found another interview with him, and I think this will kind of set things up.
There's some sex offenders that's not happy, but I'm not really in the business of making them happy. I'm in the business of keeping safe communities and making sure our children is protected.
So this was about them putting signs in front of people's yards leading up to Halloween, handful of days before, and then through Halloween, and then something like that. And somebody took them to court, I believe.
You're correct. We Narsal, we this is a case from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that was just decided 2 or 3 days ago.
Cool.
And we've got a smashing victory to talk about. So are we diving right into it? Are we going into the interview? Because I am ready, if you are.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so you people wrote an article titled, Narsal is excited to announce that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals handed Butts County Sheriff Gary Long a stinging defeat today. What case were you referring to? And explain what it means to get a favorable decision from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Well, awesome. This is the case of Corey McClendon. That was the lead plaintiff, Corey McClendon versus Sheriff Gary Long from 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, number 21-10092. This is a long-running case based on events that began at Halloween in 2018. But it's very important when you get a favorable ruling from a circuit court of appeals. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals is southeastern United States, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. And when you're talking about a court of appeals decision, you're talking about something that's just one step beneath the United States Supreme Court. So this is now binding in the 11th Circuit. And there will be cases that will launch based on this decision that will cite to this decision. So this case is huge.
I'm just going to ask, so the scope of authority here that they have, I know you're saying the three states, but if I'm in Mississippi and they put a sign in front of my yard, I can say the 11th Circuit said this, so you can't do it?
Well, you can say that, but it's not precedential. I mean, it's not binding. It's precedential persuasive authority. So you would file your suit in the district court there in Mississippi and the United States District Court if you were taking it federal, which that's what we would recommend, because elected judges in Mississippi are not going to be very hospitable to your arguments. But you would take it to a federal district court in Mississippi, which I believe is in the Fifth Circuit.
That's the same place as Texas then.
Yeah, yes. You would say that you believe that this is unconstitutional, and you would cite to this as being persuasive, but they are not obligated to follow it over there. They might, and they might not.
Okay. And as I understand the case, back in 2018, two deputies from the Butts County Sheriff's Office placed signs in the front yards of the residents of all 57 registrants, PFRs, within the county, warning, stop, and no trick or treat at this address. They really had bad grammar too, Larry. Like, that's not, I don't think that's an accurate sentence. By what authority? So what authority did they use to place the signs on their yards?
Well, that was the beautiful thing of the case. There was no authority in existence at that time, nor is there any now, that would support the actions of Sheriff Gary Long. And as we prepared for the show, I mentioned that Narsal sent a letter to Sheriff Gary Long in 2018, and we had people in Georgia help us distribute those letters to two sheriffs in Georgia, Sheriff Gary Long and Sheriff Dixon in adjoining Spalding County. And we told them unequivocally that we thought they were breaking the law and that they lacked authority and they shouldn't be doing this. And I think you're even familiar with how those letters got delivered. You knew the person that delivered them, didn't you?
Personally, I knew a very tight relationship with this individual. If you are looking at the YouTube stuff, there's one of them up on the screen now. Of course, my screen flips as soon as I do that. So there's one of the letters going to Dix Darrell is his name. That's a bizarre name. And then also there's the one for Gary Long. Yeah, those were delivered out, courier, runner, whatever, they were delivered. And then wasn't there another one delivered down into the southern part of the state too?
That happened later in Bent Hill County. But we tried our best to say, knock this off. You can't do it. And particularly when you don't have any statutory authority. Now, just because you have statutory authority does not render something constitutional. But there's a strong presumption that it is. But in this case, this was an invented thing. He didn't have any authority. So therefore, we asked him to stop. And of course, he didn't.
And I'm going to flip the script on you just a little bit. It says, how can you say that there's no authority?
I got my rights to do anything I want to do. I'm a police officer.
The police officers carry guns. Can't they make up rules as they go, Larry?
Well, Sheriff Long says he could, and he did. And he has been stopped. So those that remember the sentencing of Dr. Jack Kevorkian after many, many assisted suicides, the judge, when she imposed the prison sentence, she said, consider yourself stopped. So Sheriff Long, consider yourself stopped.
But, I mean, Larry, can't he still go do it?
Well, if he wants to be held in contempt of court, yes, he could.
Oh. I mean, does he eventually end up getting cuffed and put in one of his own little cells?
Well, not one of his own cells, but he that would be far-fetched. He is stopped, and he won't do it anymore.
Okay. Sheriff Long is a publicity hound for sure. After the warning signs were placed, he went on a media frenzy with Atlanta-area TV stations and posted his message on his official Facebook page, along with a picture of the sign. In his post, he explained that the sign had only been placed in front of the homes of PFRs. His message also erroneously represented that Georgia law forbids PFRs from participating in Halloween. In its decision, the court concluded, it is now undisputed, however, that Georgia law does not forbid PFRs from participating in Halloween. See opinion at 6. I very clearly remember this agitated you quite a bit, Larry. We've covered this. I meant to go look this up. I'll have to do that and put it in the show notes, but we've covered this twice or three times on episodes previous to this?
It did agitate me quite a bit. This whole case agitated me quite a bit because, contrary to popular belief, we are not looking to try to just file lawsuits for the fun of them. Litigation is serious business, and we file lawsuits when we feel like there's a likelihood of success on the merits and we feel that there's an egregious violation taking place. And this agitated me because there was no authority. Sheriff Long, is it clear to you now? You do not have the authority to do this. And we told you that in 2018. But for some reason, your stubbornness and your bullheadedness, you just didn't want to believe it. Now a 3-judge panel unanimously has told you that you can't do it.
I actually attended the hearings. I went there with another individual, and we listened in on the hearing on the issue of the preliminary injunction in Macon, Georgia. The trial judge did grant the injunction against the sheriff, which prohibited him from posting the signs in 2019. What happened after that?
Well, what happened after that was that the the 2019 Halloween came and went, and then we needed a decision on the merits, and I kind of skipped over part of it above, but we went, it irritated me so much, we did search for an attorney, and we settled on a guy named Mark Juracek, who's an Atlanta-based attorney, and he had challenged the GPS requirement that was imposed on PFRs after they complete their sentence, and he had won that. And we felt like that you kind of know the territory of what you're challenging. So we reached out to him, and he was the lead counsel on this. So we had another attorney, but he was the lead counsel. And both parties moved for summary judgment, which is something that always causes me great consternation, because often there are facts in dispute and a trial is necessary to resolve those disputed facts.
Tell me one of the disputed facts. I'm thinking of one specifically that about, is it proper, like, does the sheriff have the authority to put that in that easement area, like the handful of feet that's between your house and the road?
That is the biggest dispute of fact. What constituted a right-of-way, and what are the permissible uses of the right-of-way, and who gets to use those? None of that was really developed below, and we can get into it later. We were saved from our summary judgment by the court, but that was a very, very risky summary judgment.
And so then summary judgment was granted?
In favor of Sheriff Long, yes. Summary judgment was granted in favor of Sheriff Long. And Sheriff Long, he explained at his briefing, I mean, he's not doing the briefing, but he explained, the county explained in their response that the signs were imperative to warn the public about the residences of registered sex offenders. But he also admitted that prior to 2018, the sheriff's office had provided flyers that they had asked to be placed on doors. And he said he believed that placing the signs out on the road would be more effective because it would prevent the children from actually taking that risky walk up to the door of a PFR.
I see, because the mere act of walking up to the door, like spontaneously behind bushes and doors, like they're going to be accosted upon the arrival to the door?
That could happen. I mean, we've searched the internet high and low. We just can't find anything until just this last year. I think something happened in Utah with a PFR under supervision. But up until then, I mean, we just could not unearth anything that would support any fear of Halloween.
And correct me if I'm wrong in chat, that person just like opened up the door in his birthday suit.
That was one of the things he did, yes. And then allegedly he asked the invited the trick-or-treaters to come in, and that was against his terms of supervision.
Okay. Then the court noted that Sheriff Long had been sheriff in Butts County since 2013, and he admitted that during his tenure, he did not know of any incidents in Butts County involving registrants on Halloween. In fact, during his six-year tenure as sheriff, there were no issues with any registrants in Butts County having unauthorized contact or reoffending with minors at any time. Did that admission help him or hurt him?
I believe it did indeed help us and hurt him. The sheriff was addressing an imaginary problem, and I believe it was obvious to the court that the problem he was alleging doesn't really exist. And also, I believe that his publicity seeking worked against him. The court realized that he's a media hound, and I mean they made note of him posting this stuff on Facebook. Again, Sheriff Long, we're trying. FYP Education tries to help with everybody. We know you have to be a media hound to get elected. You know, we understand that. But you got to be careful when you're too much of a media hound, because it can come back to haunt you, and it did in this case.
Did the Court of Appeals ruling mean that the signs were unconstitutional, like full stop? They can't do anything of the sort?
Unfortunately, it doesn't mean that. And, you know, I've seen a lot of comments out there that people are reading that into it. But the decision should not be read that way, because they did not say that.
So what did they say instead of that?
Well, first, they applied strict scrutiny as a standard review, which is the highest standard of scrutiny of review that something does. And that's primarily applied in First Amendment. And strict scrutiny does not presume that anything's constitutional simply because it exists. And most statutory schemes only receive that rational basis review, which really causes our people a lot of consternation, because they believe the rational basis means that the result has to be perfect and it has to be the most efficient and best way. And rational basis just means, did their attempt at remedying a real problem is that a rational, is there a rationally a problem? And I think that everybody would concede that we do have some problem with offending. So just a rational basis review would do it, but they applied strict scrutiny. And that is the proper standard, in my opinion, because speech was involved. In order to place the signs, they would have to narrowly tailor the placement of the signs. This means that they cannot be placed on all registrants' homes simply because they're on the registry. And that is so hard for law enforcement. Sheriff Long, again, I'm speaking to you. I could help you draft a statute that would be constitutional. But to see, the problem is it wouldn't get you the glory you're looking for, because there would be virtually no one that would be prohibited, because it would have to be so narrowly tailored that you wouldn't get to parade the cameras around with you on Halloween, saying that you're checking on all the PFRs in Butts County, because maybe you might get to check on one or two. And that's the whole problem. You know, they don't want anything narrowly tailored. And plus, it costs a lot of money to narrowly tailor things.
And somebody actually has to then think, too.
Yes, and a risk assessment scheme that's properly done would address that problem. Not just simply a categorical approach like the AWA does, but a risk assessment would be the solution. And Georgia has a risk system. Only problem is they haven't leveled anybody. They don't have the budget for that. So I think we had our Georgia leadership had accumulated the statistics, and maybe like 15-20% of the people have been leveled in Georgia. So
there's 23,000 on it, and 16,000 have not been leveled. Somebody can do the math for me that way.
Yeah, it's like about 20% of the people maybe have been leveled, and therefore, and see, Georgia doesn't want to spend any money on this. This is an expensive proposition, you know, to do an individual assessment of people. But that would be the way that they could do this constitutionally, would be to individualize. Like, go off script a little bit. The signs can be used to warn people of danger if there has been an individual assessment done. For example, every person who has a warning on their driver's license, corrective lenses required. That is because you have had a brief, individualized determination that your vision is not sufficient without those corrective lenses that you can drive and operate safely. So therefore, they are allowed to mark your license and notify others, primarily law enforcement, but they can make that notification that you are at risk. Or in the early 20th century in the United States, signs were put on people's homes all the time regarding quarantining. But those signs were placed after there had been an individual determination made that you had a communicable disease and that you needed to be quarantined, that no one should be coming to your door. It wasn't just put willy-nilly under a theory that you might do something, which is what Sheriff Long's theory is, that you've been convicted of making a mistake in your past, therefore you might be dangerous. Sheriff Long, it doesn't work like that. You just can't do that. But can you put signs to notify people of danger? You absolutely can constitutionally put signs on people's property. But it would be the extraordinary person that you could do that to constitutionally. You just can't go around throwing signs up and announcing danger without some determination that there's a real danger posed by that individual.
And just to reiterate, like, so some sort of due process, if you have perhaps committed an offense in this way, like the guy we were just talking about in Utah or whatever. Like, maybe that would be, he has proven that he's willing to do those kinds of things. So that would be narrowly tailoring it to him, that maybe you don't want to go knock on that dude's door. But then the strict scrutiny thing, because it's the First Amendment, like, that has to be applied with the most intensive standards?
Absolutely. It has to be very narrowly tailored. They have to show that they're meeting, that they're curing, that they're attempting to address a real legitimate problem. And this is the most narrowly, least restrictive means that they can apply to do that. And putting this requirement on all 57 registrants in Butts County is no narrow tailoring at all. And that's what law enforcement is fond of doing, because it's the easiest way and the simplest way. What you could do, so the question was whether this means that signs are unconstitutional. No, it doesn't, but it means that only the rarest of situations would it be possible constitutionally, according to this three-judge panel, to do this.
I noted that in the opinion, it says the 11th Circuit concluded that the district court erred in two ways. First, it determined that a compelled government speech claim requires a finding that a reasonable third party would view the speech as endorsed by the plaintiff. Second, the district court erred by determining that the plaintiff's ability to place their own yard signs disagreeing with the warning sign could cure the original violation. Yes, I would like to put my competing sign up that says I'm not a terrible person. They went on to say, this ignores that the harm here is the forced display of a government message on private property in violation of the right to refrain from speaking at all. This was on pages 12 and 13. We have some questions that have been posted on the NARSOL's website. And are we at a position that you want to take those?
I can surely do that, but this is part of what messed up the sheriff with his arguments. He tried, as he realized that when he lost at summary judgment, he realized that his case was not as strong as he originally had hoped it would be. So he started what law enforcement does. They start trying to invent a way out of how to dig out of the hole they're in. So he started trying to dream up arguments about that they could have put their own sign up, but nobody suggested that. But the evidence from the affidavits that were entered in the testimony at the injunction hearing was contrary to that. And the panel saw through that this is a sheriff trying to talk his way out of pretending that they would have been able to put a competing sign. And he also said something to the effect that they could have taken the signs down. You know, that there was no threats made, you know, that this was a voluntary thing. But yet the testimony showed that it was all but voluntary. They were told that they'd be destroying county property. So sheriff, again, you are a law enforcement officer. Try to start telling the truth and not try to invent things, and you won't find yourself in this situation as frequently. The truth will do you a lot more good. You know, when you tell your suspects, you know, y'all just go ahead and come clean with us. Try to remember that yourself as well.
I have no sympathy for the position that he's in. However, I will just offer up the people that elected him were rallying behind him and like, way to go, Sheriff. Thank you for keeping us safe and all this stuff. So he's under immense amount of pressure to do the thing when he's an elected official, so he's just trying to garner votes and be that person. But at the same time, he has certain restrictions, and if he pushes back, I mean, that could be some level of political suicide for him.
Certainly, I don't think it'd be suicidal, but see, he probably has greater ambitions. I mean, sheriff is a prestigious role, but he probably
in Butts County.
A sheriff is a prestigious role regardless because of the immense power that they possess. I mean, my understanding is the Georgia sheriff can basically write their own budget in terms of what they're obligated to do, and they're very powerful individuals. But he probably would like to be something. He's a young fellow. I've seen his billboard signs in Butts County, and he's a fairly young guy, and he probably has ambitions. So he wants to be on the right side of these issues. But you know, NARSOL, we're really extremely gratified by the decision, and we believe it validates our mission and challenging law enforcement when they choose to invent requirements that are not part of the statutory scheme. You know, this case took quite some time. You know, it's been in litigation, and it went exceedingly fast at the Court of Appeals, but this took time, even though it was summary judgment. And a huge amount of legal bills have been run up on both sides. So Sheriff Long, the ball is kind of in your court. Do you want to keep spending your county's money on what is probably a futile expedition, or do you want to agree to a permanent injunction to bind the sheriff's office from putting any more signs up? And we'll be happy to call it quits, and we'll resolve this impasse. But you know, we're not going to give up. So if you want to go to the Supreme Court, we'll be there with you.
All right. So some questions that have been provided by different people, some people in chat, and then from the NARSOL website. It says, does this ruling address these Halloween warning signs as a whole, or does this specifically target the fact that the signs were posted by the sheriff without statutory authority?
Well, it was launched with the facts alleged that it was without authority. But the way that the panel wrote the decision, it is broad enough that you can interpret beyond it. Technically only applies the way we framed the arguments, was that he lacked the authority. But had he even had the authority, this is pretty clear without narrowly tailoring that these signs would have been unconstitutional. But specifically, that wasn't alleged. So in a general answer, yes, it does go beyond that. But that wasn't what our allegations were. We went after Sheriff Long because he invented law, and that's not his role. His role, he put his hand on that Bible, and he's supposed to enforce the law. So we went after him because he was inventing the law. if they were to pass a law at some point requiring Halloween signs, we'd be after them again because we still believe it's unconstitutional. We believe that that decision makes it quite clear that it would be the most rare circumstances where you could constitutionally place these signs.
I believe you mispronounced the word. You meant to say Babel.
I forgot that, yes.
Okay. Moving along. If the ruling addresses the sign issue as a whole, this could at least be used as a convincing argument in other appellate districts in new challenges to state who mandate such signs by law, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. We're going to be looking around, we being Norfolk, we're going to be looking at other states that have done this around the country. I think Missouri may be one, but we're going to be looking where signs are a problem. And we may even expand beyond just the people who have paid their debt to society, because these signs, even if persons under supervision, are very problematic. So therefore, we're looking in your direction, wherever you are, as Prime Minister Rabin said when he was a defense minister back in the, I believe it was in the 80s, he said, let Tel West be well, wherever they are. They're not beyond the long arm of the Israeli Defense Forces. So law enforcement, beware wherever you are, that if you're going to invent requirements, you are being watched and we're looking for opportunities to shut you down.
Related to that question, I think, is in chat says, I can only imagine how the children of the PFRs felt. I often wonder if the law enforcement think about the children's safety. I'm happy those folks won't have to deal with that garbage anymore. So, like, one of the plaintiffs, if I'm not mistaken, lived with his parents. So it would be one thing if you live in your own, on your own little farm out in the middle of nowhere and they put a sign like that, it's pointing at you. But if you live with your spouse and your kids, now you have this sign in your yard and like, well, who's the one that we should be, quote unquote, afraid of? What is their rights to protect their speech from what Sheriff Long had done to the house?
That was a convoluted question.
Sorry. But what about the people that live at the same address and then have a sign in their yard?
Yeah, I get the gist of it. Yeah. And that's part of what's going to happen with this. Again, there's a lot with Sheriff Long right now. The two of our three plaintiffs ended up, they were living in parents' homes. They did not own them. So those cases have been remanded. The panel didn't make a decision because standing was a part of the issues raised by the sheriff, that they didn't have standing. So therefore, we may have to go back to the district court and amend those complaints and then let them proceed, because the owners would have the standing and the very thing that you're asserting there about how it impacted them to have that sign placed in their yard. But again, Sheriff Long could end this by saying, I won't do it anymore, and the cease all litigation. So I implore him to end this endeavor and let's stipulate to a permanent injunction and let's be done with this.
So Mr. Cynical here says, but if the ruling specifically targets the signs in this case due to the lack of statutory authority for the sheriff to post them, couldn't the state make such a mandate in state law and render the court's ruling useless?
Well, they could possibly try. And I try to imagine everything in the worst possible scenarios that could come down. And, you know, we've had people threaten to jump off of bridges because of that. But I've tried to imagine if I were a cynical individual, what I would do. And I've come up with several scenarios. And one thing they would do, part of what messed the sheriff up was that even though he didn't really have his argument cogent, he tried to invent on the fly. But the Georgia statutory scheme, even though we didn't fully establish what is right of way and what isn't, because we did summary judgment, there's a statute in terms of who can place signs on right-of-way, and the sheriff doesn't have that authority. So the court picked up on that, and I don't believe that was in our briefing. If it was, it escaped my eagle eye. But the court picked up on that. If it was in our briefing, I've got to give credit for that being there. But what they would do, if they're going to be cynical, they would try to give the sheriff authority to place signs on right-of-way. And then they would come back and say it's cured, but that doesn't cure it, because even though you would diminish our thing about whether it was right of way or not, the signs themselves don't magically become constitutional just because you have authority to place something on right of way. So that won't get them completely out of the woods.
So you can see an example of some road workers. They come and they're doing work there in front of your house, and they place a sign that says, "Hey, road, you know, some sort of road hazard ahead." They're like, I don't want that on my property, but they have the authority to do that in respect of doing the maintenance on the road.
Correct. So like I say, it's a long shot that would change the law to give the sheriff right to put signs on people's property or on the right of way. But that would be something that they could do. We've already thought about that. I'd like to think that we've thought of everything that they could do. I mean, they could conceivably just say, well, we'll adopt the AWA tier system, and that way you'll have a level. But unfortunately, that doesn't work because that's a categorical approach, and that's stagnant. And it's based on what you did, and that doesn't ever change, because what you did, unless the tier level is changed, it doesn't change by any of the dynamic factors that cause you to be less of a risk. So that would be another thing that they could try to do, is say, well, we'll just make sure everybody's level. We're not going to spend all the money to level these 16,000 people. So we'll just that won't save you. But that's something we've thought about that they could try to do.
I can tell you about an article I just saw on the AJC about that specific subject too. It's funny.
But if we always spend our time worrying about what they might do, we would never litigate anything. Because you heard King Alexander say, when we were having him regular guests, every time the defense lawyers win anything in Louisiana, they just simply go to the legislature, the prosecution does, and change the statute. But then we should just give up and throw in the towel and say, we do whatever you want to do. We can't do that. We're going to fight you. And if they try to make these changes, if they succeed, we'll have to come back with new challenges. But, I mean, everything that I think that it can be imagined, I've already imagined it.
Another one is, as I stated in a comment on the Florida Action Committee website, this logic can and should be used against the registry itself. If posting a sign is compelled speech, then so is the registry. I'm assuming they're talking about the website, the registry.
I don't see the same comparison there. I'm having trouble tracking with that.
I'm going to extrapolate out, Larry. I'm going to say that people are saying, so if a sign is placed in front of my front yard that says that I'm the bad person, then that indicates me, that they have published the information. I know where you're going to go, but so then having the public registry website is publishing the same kind of information saying that this person is dangerous. The difference is going to be, where is that information hosted? I can post stuff that says that Larry's a very dangerous person all I want. I might end up with slander problems, but I can post that all I want. But if I post it on your yard, that's a problem.
Well, that's one distinguishing thing. But the registry is historically, if you look at the registry, there's very little registry that says particular person's dangerous. In fact, they say just the opposite. They say that this is not intended to tell you what level of threat this person poses. The few states that actually level people with a risk assessment, they may have that on their website. But again, it's a lot of states don't do risk assessments. I think more don't than do. Yeah. As we said, a tier level is not the same thing as a risk level. And you may be a tier three, and the public may perceive that that's a dangerous person, but the state is not saying that you're a dangerous person by putting that tier three on you. That's something that the public has, through lack of understanding what tier three means, they've decided that you're dangerous. But in this particular instance, the public service announcement that Sheriff Long, every inference was from the sheriff's official that this individual is dangerous on this property. You shouldn't go near this place. I can see some tangential relationship to the arguments trying to make that the registry itself is compelled speech, but I don't think we're there yet in terms of making that argument. I just don't think we're there yet.
I think this is along the same lines. It says, with the advent of the World Wide Web, all you need to do is type in someone's name, and if they don't have any criminal history, no results of criminality will appear. If they do have a criminal history, you'll easily be able to click around and see what they were charged and convicted of, along with how much jail time they did, if any. So with that, there's no need for a registry. Searching for someone's information is not compelled because you aren't being forced to give that information. It's being sought, but the registry is forced on you, requiring all sorts of information outside of just charged and conviction. So the registry and any license branding, including passport branding, is compelled speech. It needs to be argued.
It has been argued. The Alliance for Constitutional Sex Offense Laws, sexual offense laws, argued that twice in two different federal courts.
All right, then we'll move on.
So they lost on both of them. So I think I made the example. Compel speech is not as cut and dry as people want to make the argument. When you go in a restaurant, and I know they're going to say, Larry, you don't understand. A restaurant is a voluntary thing that you choose to be in. You go in a restaurant. I'll use our state example, our city in particular, where we use the red and green system of tags on restaurants in terms of whether it's kosher to go in or whether that restaurant's experiencing problems. If they have a red tag, they may be operating in a downgrade status where they're going to be shut down in 10 days if they don't come into compliance. Do you think that they endorse that speech? Do you think that
they probably
do not?
When
the red tag? Okay, but it's being compelled. If you want to continue to operate, you have to have that on your front door. It gives you an incentive to come into compliance. They're compelling you to speak, and they're doing it for public safety. So a compelled speech can be done, but it's most narrowly tailored, like I said, with the driver's licenses. And people are going to say, well, Larry, you don't have to drive. You don't understand the difference. Yes, I understand the difference. The people who got sick, who didn't choose to get sick, when they had those signs placed on their house, they were being compelled to speak. But they were being compelled to speak because it was narrowly tailored that they had a contagious disease that could be damaging or fatal to the community if that house wasn't quarantined. So they were compelled to speak. The government can compel you to speak. So people need to get over that argument, but it's under most limited of circumstances where the government can compel speech. And I mean, as far as the passport markings, I think that one probably is going to stand until it's changed by law, by statutory amendment. I think that marking on the passport is here for the foreseeable future. I'm sorry, I regret it, but I think it's here.
Just to noodle around on the First Amendment, like you can't run around and say certain words in airports and movie theaters. You can. There's consequences for it. There's restrictions on any of these amendments. You don't have an absolute right to do any of these things. They just have to be severely limited in their application.
Correct. When you start intruding on speech, either prohibiting speech or forcing speech, it has to be with the utmost of tailoring and precision. But it can be constitutionally done, just like Justice Scalia said on the clip we've played before. You can have limitations on gun ownership. He just says we don't know where they are yet, but there are limitations. There are limitations on speech, on forcing speech. There are limitations, but it can be done, but the right circumstances have to exist. This was not those circumstances when you can compel a person to speak. There are ample alternatives, and that was pointed out in the ruling for people to get the information. There are ample alternatives for them to know about people on the registry. They don't need to have a sign in front of their house, particularly those who may not pose any threat whatsoever.
This one is similar, but I want, because the more negativity says, excellent news. However, my only assumption now would be that in the near future, this sign issue will be pushed as a way to grab votes and put forward as an ordinance, which will then render all of this moot. And simply add another law to the books. It saddens me to know that all we ever seem to get accomplished is the poking of the bear.
I don't agree with that. I mean, we
know that we have seen where challenges have been filed, and then they turn around and go place in a new law. Okay, so by that logic, then we should just sit down and let them do whatever they want, and we'll just take it. And like, that's not the right attitude either.
That sounds like our friend in Clayton County, Georgia, that would write that, but I don't agree with that. They will have great difficulties putting a broad Halloween restriction in place unless this ruling is overturned. Now, I think you've got something to read about what Sheriff Long promised to do at the onset of this case.
I know that he said, I was trying so hard, Larry. I was looking like through hours of clips trying to find him going, I'm going to take this all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yep, Sheriff Long vowed at the onset of this case that he would take it all the way to the Supreme Court. So it's in his ballpark now. He can file a cert petition if he so chooses. But this is written by three conservative judges all, I think, appointed by Republicans. But the chief judge is on the three-judge panel. And there's a Trump appointee and a George W. Bush appointee. And I don't remember who appointed Judge Pryor. But this is a solidly written opinion. They can't even, part of one of the things you argue when you file a cert petition is you argue that there was a dissenting opinion on the panel. There's no dissenting opinion on this panel. I mean, okay. This is one of those cases where I generally don't like for things to go to the Supreme Court, but I would feel okay if this one does go. Because Sheriff Long, what you'll do is you'll help us take this nationwide. So I'm giving you a little pointer here. If you take this to the Supreme Court, and I do believe we will win, then you will have made what was kind of like what the people did that didn't want same-sex marriage. You will have made something nationwide that's right now just confined to three states. So it's kind of a, what does it say, make my day? I believe that I'd be confident enough that we would prevail in this very conservative Supreme Court. And then we have a nationwide precedent. And you'll also run up a bunch of bills for your taxpayers to pay. And if that's your choice, then your voters still support you after you're spending a whole bunch of money that you could be putting in police vehicles and new technology and things to make the citizens of Butts County safer. That's your choice. But we will be there if that's where you choose to go.
The fact that no one reoffended in his district is actually not the best argument for us, because he could easily claim that it was his efforts and policies that prevented any reoffenses.
He could do that, but he only did this for 18 before he was stopped,
yeah.
And so he's been sheriff for many years now. So it's going to be hard for him to really to say that. But you know, he certainly, politics requires people to do things that they might not do because they're catering to the masses. He knows his constituents. He knows the citizens of Butts County, and he knows what resonates with them. And you know, this is our system, folks. I mean, you can't be all that mad at it. The ones you need to be mad at is when you look in the mirror in the morning. The reason why they do this is because it works. If it quits working, they'll stop doing it. It's really that simple. This type of grandstanding only works because you, the voter, vote for these people.
Oh, you know the elections are rigged, Larry.
Right.
Okay, moving along. Wouldn't the signs, in theory, be the same thing as a deputy or sheriff instructing a registrant that they must stand out by the road of their house as where the sign would have been placed and keep repeating out loud, stop, stop, no trick or treat at this address?
It's
an interesting way to frame it.
Very, very good comparison. That's pretty close to what it would do. And again, you know, some judges, when they're punishing people, they do put in some really creative things like require. I mean, I have seen people have to pronounce their criminality as part of their community service. I think that our former Secretary of State here has to do that, has to go around part of her hundreds of hours of community service. She has to tell people about why you shouldn't embezzle. You know, but you know, that can be done as a part of punishment, but not as part of the civil regulatory scheme. So you got to remember, folks, utter these words, civil regulatory scheme.
Regulatory scheme. I've seen where the judge would like impose that someone has to wear like the sandwich sign thing that they like, they're wearing the sign and then have to walk around.
Yeah, that some of that may be over the top, but see, if I'm a judge and I give you a creative sentence like that, I can tell, you may have a constitutional challenge on this sentence. So I'm going to give you a choice and I'm going to have you decide on the record if you want the sentence. I'm torn between option A, which is to give you this amount of jail time, or option B, to give you a very creative sentence that's going to require a little bit of embarrassment, but it's trying to help better you as an individual so that when you are finished with your debt to society, that you won't think about reoffending again. So I'm going to let you make the choice. Do you want option A or option B? And then you might have a better chance of that sentence holding up on appeal because the person has knowingly decided that you realize as a judge that you're being a little bit creative and that you may in fact have a constitutional challenge on this, but I'm really struggling on this. And my inclination is to incarcerate you, but I've got this really wild idea for a sentence. Would you like this in the alternative? And see what the person says.
Sure. A couple more questions. Was there a payout on this win?
Not yet. This case is still active. There has to be there has to be a lot of things happen that it'll be a year before there's a payout or maybe longer. If there's an appeal to the Supreme Court, that'll stay everything if there's a cert petition filed. But if there is no cert petition filed, the mandate has to come down. The district court has to receive the mandate and to reinstitute proceedings pursuant to the mandate, and there'd have to be a fee petition filed, and the county would get to argue why that fee petition was exorbitant and put their objections to it, and then the court would conceivably hold a hearing or maybe rule without a hearing. So the fee petition, I mean, that's months away, but there very well will at some point be fees awarded for this, yes.
And can we talk really quick? We're getting close on time, but can we talk really quick about the settlement that happened in the neighboring county?
Spalding County, yes, there was a settlement on that one. The people in Spalding County, they saw the light after the judge granted the injunction in Butts County, and these were two different districts. One was in the middle district of Butts County, even though they're parallel, was in the middle district of Georgia, and Spalding's in the northern district, so it was two different trial courts. But they decided, based on the actions taken by the trial judge in the Butts County case, that they wished to enter to negotiate a settlement. So that case was settled. So that goes down as a win, and their part of the settlement would have been fees, and I don't know what the amount was, but there were fees as part of that settlement.
I mean, is it fair to even like speculate?
Oh, I would speculate that it would be in the neighborhood $30,000 to $50,000 of legal fees on our side, but that doesn't take into account the other side, because they have fees also. You know, these smaller counties typically don't have a staff attorney. They do contract with lawyers, and so there's a county attorney, but that county attorney often has a law practice independent of their county attorneyship, and the county contract is good for, say, up to $120,000 per annum for legal fees and stuff. So of course they try to milk that, bill everything they can. I mean, our great capitalist system is try to get all you can. So they if they get into a case like this, they want to do as much as they can to earn the max they can under their contract. I mean, I don't make the rules, I just tell you what they are.
Would there be any reason that Butts County would then go request an en banc hearing?
Well, they could, and they may, but it's not likely to go anywhere. They don't have anything to cite to on this because it was a unanimous panel. So one of the things, that's an argument you would make. You'd say, hey, you know, this is a split decision, and you know, and this eloquent dissent. I mean, everybody loves dissents when they're on the losing side. I mean, they just think how brilliantly written the dissent is, and that would be a case. That would be a case where you would really concentrate on the dissent. But there's no dissent here, so the chances of an en banc being granted in this case would be very slim. You've got the chief judge prior. I believe he's chief judge. And I just don't see that they would grant it. I mean, they can certainly file for it, run up more legal bills, because we'll have to tell, yeah, we'll have to file a response saying you shouldn't grant further review, that this is over with. But they could do that.
Larry, that is all I have. Is there anything else that you have before I close this segment and we go on to Who's That Speaker?
I think I've babbled enough. I just want to remind law enforcement officials that you are elected to enforce the law, and if you truly do want to make the law, that you should probably surrender the badge, and you should run for a different type of office, and as usual it's going to be a legislative seat, but you should run for the branch of government that makes the laws. But you take an oath, and we need you to respect that oath and follow and merely enforce the laws. And you can even lobby as a sheriff for laws that would be stronger than what you have, but you don't get to just invent them. And as I say, someone is watching.
And I'm going to close things out with this, Larry. All right, so that was me closing out the segment. You probably don't get that.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, it didn't? Damn it!
No, something came through. I just didn't. I wasn't able to process it.
Oh, okay. There's a song from, God, I think it's the 80s. It could be the early 90s. And it's called Doing the Butt. All right. So I figured that somebody suggested that I play that because it would be very cute, considering we're talking about Butts County.
All right.
We got to move right over to Who Is That Speaker, because we are really short on time now, Larry. We've been doing this for an hour and 10 minutes almost. Last week, I played this clip.
It was through a direct message on the application Twitter. I just sent him a nice message, just, hello, I'm a huge fan. I knew that Hillary Clinton would be running for president in the year 2016, and I wanted to see if it was still up to the same antics. I knew that it was going downhill and really fast. I was disgusted. That's part of the reason that I came forward.
And so I still don't know who the name of the person is, but Al from Maryland wrote in. He says, Andy, I was just listening to the podcast, and I sort of got this one right away. I say sort of because I don't know her name, but that is the woman that Anthony Weiner was sending junk pictures to. Do I have to get her name right? So, and I still can't find her name, but yes, that is totally correct. It was a teenager. And I found some of the pictures blurred out of what he was doing. And so they were not very savory pictures.
So now when you're saying junk, that would be of his anatomy, of his private parts, right?
Yes, not the literal junk in his trunk, but the figurative junk in his trunk.
So, all righty. So we're clear. All right.
So yes, Al is a very astute, aware individual, and he keeps getting all these right and yells at me when we make easy ones like, I did not have sex with that woman over there. And but so this one, God, I hope nobody gets it, but you got to tell me who this one is. So this is for episode 211, Who's That Speaker?
A lot of people who go into prison straight, and when they come out, they're gay. So did something happen while they were in there? Most ask yourself.
All right, so if you know who that is, send an email message over to registrymatterscast@gmail.com with who you think that individual might be. Anything before we close out, Larry? Any final parting words?
Just thanks to our wonderful group of new patrons. We have three this week.
And we have four, actually. I even missed one. I didn't even see this one come in. But yeah, so we have Maurice Goodmew. I don't know what that even means. Steve and Stefan. And I can't thank them all enough. Stefan just joined up a couple hours ago, which I thank you very much. I appreciate it.
They're all at the $1,400 a month level, right?
100%. Yes, they all send in the tax refund money.
So, and we've got to get people going to our new education website, fypeducation.org. We got those who do not want to be a regular patron. There's a donate button if what we do is sufficient enough that you feel like you want to do a love offering. And we're hoping in the near future to have it where you can actually order transcripts and different things. I mean, that's still in works, but we're trying to get it's, there's all the stuff is way complicated, more than I can explain, but we're trying to figure out how that people can order various things that we offer. It's all free if you want to print it, but if you want us to distribute it to you, there's a cost involved. But we're going to have just a plethora of free resources up there, transcript PDFs that you can send to your loved ones, summaries of the state statutes, cases we talk about. You know, we're going to put PDFs of cases like this one on the website. So there's going to be a plethora of free stuff.
Very good. You can find all of that stuff, links over at registrymatters.co. Leave voicemail questions at 747-227-4477. registrymatterscast@gmail.com if you want to send in some communications of some sort. And of course, we were just talking about new patrons, patreon.com/registrymatters. And you can find all those same resources, similar resources over at fypeducation.org. Larry, that is all we have for the night. And I thank you as always for coming in. And that was a good case, great win. And I will talk to you very soon. Have a great night.
Thanks. It was exciting news this week.
Very good, sir. Good night.
You've been listening to FYP.